Quorum. Fire Chief asked me to announce the fire exits are both doors that you could have come in the auditorium, as well as the two staircases going up the stage. Would you be kindly rise for our Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, liberty, and justice for all. Thank you. For those of you looking for the certified free cash number, there is no certified free cash because that certification is not done until later this year. I have examined and found in order the call of the meeting, the officer's return of service, and confirmation of mailing the warrant to residents. I ask Chuck Woodard, Chair of the Board of Selectmen, for a motion to dispense with the reading of the call of this meeting, the officer's return of service, notice, and the individual articles of the warrant. So moved would do the trick. Is there a second? There is. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed? It is unanimous. No coffee or snacks tonight, but we do have one important announcement, actually two, both concerning 375. The committee asked me to remind you that this Saturday from noon to 9 p.m. at LS is the field day and fireworks. They also pointed out that our 375th birthday is actually today. And I might add, you all look very good for 375. Bathrooms are located across the hall. Extra warrants should be either in front here or on the tables out by the door. But we also have the Boy Scouts have some extra warrants, so that is there anyone who doesn't have a warrant and needs one? If you do, raise your hand. Do the Boy Scouts have the warrants? Where are they? Could you please just raise your hand and they'll come by and give it to you? Could other side. And there's one right here in front. Great. While they're doing that, I'll keep going. So please join us in thanking Boy Scout Troop 63 leader Ken Chung and the scouts who are running the mics today, Bailey Prince, Mark Tentarelli, David Abraham, and Max Fishman. For our new attendees, I would like to introduce town officials who are involved in town meeting and are present tonight. To my right is Town Clerk Rosemary. Oh, could you please raise your hand when I call your name? To my right is Town Clerk Rosemary Harvell. To her right is the Assistant Town Clerk Veronica Craven. To my left are Selectman Chuck Woodard, Larry O'Brien, Bob Hardy, Len Simon, Pat Brown, Town Manager Maureen Valenti. Out front here is Town Accountant Christine Nyan, and is the Assistant Town Accountant Robin Porcella here? No. At the computer, we have Patty Golden, the Administrative Assistant to the Board of Selectmen. Layla Frank is the Supervisor of the Office of Selectmen. Elaine Jones, who manages the town's legal department, and Mark Thompson, our technology administrator, and his assistant, Brian Powell. I'd also like to thank the entire LS AV and building staff, especially Chuck and Kevin. Our camera crew tonight for TV is Richard Pintal, Nick Koski, and Lynn Poirot. Finance Committee to my far left, Mark Manassian, Andrew Sullivan, Adrian Davies, Fred Floru, Bill Nealon Jr., Jose Garcia Maiten, Susan Berry Chair, Jeff Barker, Joan Carlton. Also down in front is Assistant Town Manager Marianne Bilodeau and Treasurer Collector Finance Director Andrea Turkelson, Police Chief Scott Nix, Fire Chief Bill Miles, Facilities Director Jim Kelly. I think that's all I saw. Is there anyone else that I missed? Anyone else out there? Okay. For some reason, everybody is pointing to Paul Kenny. He's last for a reason. Mr. Kenny announced that he'll be retiring from the town council position effective December 31st, 2014. With that in mind, the Office of Selectmen on August 19th issued a press release as follows, and I quote, Mr. Kenny has served Sudbury as town council for 38 years. He has had a long and distinguished career that includes the successful participation in a number of landmark legal cases on behalf of the town. During the mid-70s, he appeared before the Labor Relations Commission on a key decision holding that minimum manning was not mandatory or subject to bargaining, which continues to be the practice today. Secondly, in litigation on behalf of the town against the ABCC in 1988, the appeals court upheld the town of Sudbury's refusal to renew a package store liquor license where the holder no longer had any premises at which to exercise the license. The elimination of the so-called pocket license resulted in the issuance of new licensing guidelines by the Alcoholic Beverages Control Commission. In 2003, he presented and argued the town's position in a major land use case to the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts involving town acquisition of land taxed as agricultural land pursuant to a statutory right of first refusal. The case was decided in favor of Sudbury. As a result, the town was able to acquire substantial attractive acreage that would otherwise have been sold to developers at minimal cost. Mass General Laws was subsequently amended to comply with the decision. Many of the major land acquisitions of the town have involved important legal questions. Mr. Kenny played a vital role in bringing a successful conclusion to the negotiation and documentation of the Meacham, Weisblatt, Piper, Dixon, and Cutting land acquisitions. According to former Selectman John Drabinski, who worked with Mr. Kenny over a 27-year period, Paul has been a key, though often unheralded, part of the town's ability to preserve so much open space. Less visibly, but no less importantly, Mr. Kenny has spent countless hours advising town staff and board and committee members on the complex legal issues that frequently arise in the course of conducting municipal business. We are deeply grateful for his substantial efforts on behalf of the town over close to four decades and wish him the best. End quote. Please join with me in thanking Mr. Kenny. I'd like to review some procedural matters for this special town meeting. No smoking in the hall. Please turn off all cell phones and any other devices that emit light and noise. Please give your name and address each time you speak in order to assure a clear audio tape record. If you desire to be recognized, please raise your card. Do not stand at the mics. I will be able to see you in your seat. If you're sitting near a standing mic and I recognize you, you may go there to speak. Otherwise, please wait for a runner to bring you a handheld mic. The mic will be on, and there's no need to blow into it. We are using the Boy Scout runners again because the long aisles make it very difficult for a voter in the middle to get up to a standing mic to speak. All motions of substance, particularly motions to amend, shall be delivered to myself and the town clerk in writing before they are made. Also, you should give a copy to the folks at the computer in front of the hall. When you make a motion or an amendment, you must do so when first recognized and not at the end of a statement or question. Only registered voters of the town and non-resident town employees and representatives may speak without leave of the hall. Non-residents are required to sit in the last two rows of the section to the left or the right. I caution those of you who are here because of a special matter of concern to you not to bolt the hall as soon as we have voted on the matter. You will be treating your neighbors disrespectfully for not listening to their articles as they have listened to yours. In point of fact, the first article is the one that's going to take the longest on the police station simply because we will have debate on it. Articles 2 and 3 are both non-binding resolutions, and our tradition has been and will be again tonight not to debate non-binding resolutions. So they will take just a very short period of time. So I would appreciate if we could stay and just finish that up so we can only go one night. I am encouraging those of you who don't usually speak at town meeting to do so. And also that counting will take considerably longer in the auditorium because of the very long rows with no aisle breaks. Please do not ask for a head count by tellers unless you are sure that I have miscalculated. I assure you that unless the standing vote is obvious, I will call for a head count by tellers. I will announce the quantum of vote before you vote on each article so that you know what we're looking at. There should be no clapping, hissing, booing, or other audible noises for or against speakers before, during, or after presentations. Speakers may not make disrespectful comments, whether directed at a voter, speaker, town official, or town employee. My job as moderator is to ensure full and open discussion and fair play on each article. Your job as legislators is to ensure goodwill and respect for differing viewpoints. May we have a motion under Article 1?
Good evening, everybody. It's Scott Nix, Chief of Police here in Sudbury. Mr. Moderator, thank you for putting the extra pressure on that we're going to be the longest article. I appreciate that. Thank you. Article 1, Construction and Police Headquarters, Supplementary Project Funding, Slide 1 of 2. Move to appropriate the sum of $280,800 to be expended under the direction of the Permanent Building Committee for the purpose of augmenting the appropriation for construction of a new police department headquarters in appurtenant structures on the town-owned land adjacent to the existing fire headquarters as voted under Article 14 of the 2014 Annual Town Meeting and approved previously in the debt exclusion question voted at the 2014 annual town election. And to raise this appropriation, the treasurer, with the approval of the selectmen, is authorized to borrow $280,800 under Mass General Law Section 44, Subsection 7, notwithstanding a ballot vote for the augmenting amount raised under this article. This sum shall be appropriated and borrowed within the levy limit and added to the sum previously appropriated and approved as exempt from the levy limit.
Does that receive a second? It does. Chief?
Thank you. So again, welcome everybody. It's a little better now that we have a quorum. I was a little worried in the beginning, but we appreciate you coming. It's going to be both Jim Kelly and I presenting tonight, and I will start off. This is the proposed station. If you remember when we began this process, we began with a brick facade. We've gone to a cementitious siding, again, to try to reduce pricing, but this is just a rendition of it. Just for those that want to know, it's still going next to fire headquarters. It hasn't moved, which as proposed the entire time. But the real meat and potatoes, why are we here tonight? We're here because we need some additional funding. And if I may just back up to town meeting of 2014, we came with a presentation that we were unsure of what the pricing was going to be. Due to the disparity of two professional estimates. We weren't sure whether it was going to be a 7.9 figure we were looking for or a 7.2 figure. We felt strongly, everybody, Jim Kelly, the Permanent Building Committee, and myself, that we maintain that 7.2 figure at that town meeting because that's what the voters had voted on, the number of them, the premise of which they voted. So, again, for the integrity, we felt that it to maintain that 7.2 figure. There was a lot that were supportive of additional, but that's why we went with it. We appreciate the support back then. Now we have bids that were open on August 20th of 2014, and those bids are now concrete. We're not going with estimates anymore. We're going with true figures of what we're expecting to spend. And in going forward with that, we believe that we're going to need a total cost now of $7,480,800, which, with my Lincoln Submarine math, is $280,800 additional funds needed. What is part of that is some additional months for construction, as well as a couple of alternates. Now, the alternates, I've heard people said they were extras. They're not extras. They were in the project the entire time. But in doing a pricing structure so that if the bids came in well in advance of where we were predicting, possibly above the 7.9 or in the area of 7.9, we wanted to make sure that we had it so the project could still go forward. The first alternate, landscaping, it's not fancy landscaping. It's not anything, you know, we're bringing in palm trees or anything along those lines. It's we had stripped the landscaping out of the general bid in order to, again, for that pricing ability to go back later. It's the bushes, the grass, the trees that are required for the site plan and what we had presented to the many committees that we went before that gave approval to the project. The second alternate, covered parking. Covered parking, this would not be the entire lot. This would be strictly for the police cruisers, the police equipment. Why this is so beneficial for the officers is going out, and number one, it protects the assets that we have in the cruisers, but when they're transitioning at shift or they're coming in and out and they're bringing all their equipment to and fro, you're not doing so in the rain. You're not doing so in the snow. You're not doing so in the wind. You're able to check your equipment properly and make sure that it's in proper order. This alternate we felt was prudent because if we were to do it after the fact, you would have to tear up part of what you had just constructed, therefore increasing your costs. And we estimate that that cost to do the canopy at a later date would probably be double what we have the bid before us. So again, because it's part of the integrity of the site, next to a retaining wall, we felt that that was prudent to go forward for the second alternate as well. There was a third alternate that came in at approximately $200,000, and that's an outbuilding. It would be a five-bay garage that would allow us for storage for various items. But one of the big things that we do is we have no place currently to really process vehicles, other items, larger items for crime scene. We currently have two seized vehicles that are stored at the DPW department, and they've so graciously accumulated a few dents by the snow falling off of the DPW department on the vehicles, so reducing the value we have. One was confiscated for trafficking and cocaine arrest that we had, and another one was, we believe, and we proved to the court that it was purchased with proceeds from a break-in and entering into a residence where they had stolen approximately $100,000 worth of jewels and other things. But we could have stored it there in a secure location, but nonetheless, we've chosen to exclude that alternate at this point because we can potentially go back later and do it at a lesser price, possibly, but we wanted to take the middle of the line and not necessarily come up to the 7.9 that we thought we were going to be. And this isn't a cost overrun. This is just what we think is a prudent, robust project.
Thank you, Chief. I'm Jim Kelly. I hope everybody got a chance to read the letter that was written by the chairman of the Board of Selectmen. This was an issue that came up on the Selectmen's agenda last night. And it describes an option of funding the extra money that we're requesting tonight. The option is still to borrow the $280,800. The annual debt payment of that money will be $21,060, which is still about the equivalent of $3 to the so-called average house in Sudbury, just as a reference. But this is paid out of the taxes raised within the levy limit. This isn't very common. In fact, I've been told at least 32 years or so we haven't used this. Usually our projects are quite large. I mean, this is something that we couldn't usually use as a mechanism because there's simply not enough money in the operating budget to support, for instance, the $7.2 million portion of this. But only the $280,800. The board, the selectmen, didn't think a debt exemption and therefore further increases in taxes was necessary. So the funds today that we're talking about, that is one option of making sure we can appropriate that money tonight or tomorrow and move quickly with this project. We're ready to go. All the permits are in place, and we'd like to get started before winter. For the remaining of the project, we still are paying a certain amount of money, all of us, annually. That portion of the money outside the levy is $93 for the average home in Sudbury, going down annually for 20 years. And then one more thing I just wanted to mention. It was brought up at the selectmen's meeting last night, and it's a good point. Another long-term commitment that we will be responsible for is an increase in our operation and maintenance expenses. We're going to move from a 6,400-square-foot to a 14,000-square-foot building. So our cost to maintain that building will increase. But we've done some calculations. It's not substantial, I should say that. One of the primary reasons for that is that we're building to an advanced energy code, an energy code better than the stretch energy code. A building's operational costs, a big part of that is your heating and cooling and electricity. We're going to pay less than half what we're paying at the current station per square foot, because the current station is just clearly horrible as far as an envelope in energy goes. Our new building is great, and it's I think it's something that out of a building code, I think this energy code is really fantastic, because we're going to reap these savings or these cost avoidances for the life of the building. This is another question that has come up in all the town meetings, so we thought it would be worthwhile to bring it up again, and that's, what are we going to do with the existing building? The answer is actually the same, is that we don't know what we're going to do with it. We could sell it for commercial use. We could lease it. We could use it for a municipal use. We could rent it. We could loan it to somebody. We don't know. But I think if we vote, the town votes, the hall votes for the station tonight, this will certainly be something that will be real and that we will move forward and find out what the alternatives are for that building. One of the alternatives, or one of the questions over the last several months or years, was maybe we could apply the money if we sell it, if the decision is to sell it, maybe we could apply that money back to the cost of the construction of the station. So we'll work on those. And I wanted to mention, this is a good opportunity to plug the town forum in the fall, is this would be a great subject. We'll get together again, I think it may be in October, and get input from the residents on ideas or suggestions or concerns for that building. But we hadn't wanted to make that decision or sort of get to that next step until we get to the final step, and that's being able to build a new police station. So speaking of steps, great to see a positive outcome tonight. That would be the first next step. Like I said before, this would be so we could get going with the construction as soon as possible. We would award the contract to the construction company, who we actually met with yesterday. There were four, the president, vice president, and the project manager and an administrator came down from southern New Hampshire, and they met the permanent building committee, the chief, and several others at the fire station. I think we may have found a great contractor. Their references check out fabulous. They scored a 97 out of 100 in the DCAM qualifications. They're a family business, and personally, when the name is on the truck, I think you've got somebody who really wants to do a good job. So we're excited about that. We'll file for a building permit immediately. We've actually already got the building inspector to review the plans, because we have an in on that. I've often said that, you know, getting a building permit is easy. It's all the information it takes to get to the building inspector. That takes all the time. We've done all that. Historic district, site plan, conservation, Board of Health, building inspectors looked at electrical, fire, plumbing and gas. So, you know, this is great. I mean, we're ready to go, like I said. So, and we do pay the building inspector, so that helps. We'll begin work immediately, maybe by the end of the month, and then in about 14 months, we'll move in. So thanks. Thank you all for coming. I'm glad we had a quorum. I'd like to really thank the Permanent Building Committee. I think I thanked them last time, but I can't say enough about the effort and the passion to build the best building for the town, for everybody. Mike Melnick, Elaine Jones, co-chairs, John Porter, Gifford Perry, Craig Blake, Tom Joyner, and Bruce I helped us on this project as well. So, as all the volunteers in this town, another fabulous group. We'll take your questions in a few minutes, but I wanted to reiterate something the chief has said. He said it last night, and he said it before, is that we're always available for a question, a comment, critique. Call us while the construction's taking place. You're going down the street, you say, what are they doing today? Or maybe not every day, but, you know, we really want to work for you and we'd rather, you know, be able to answer questions, because going through this process, there's a lot of, we read things and we're wondering, wow, you know, that's too bad somebody didn't call us. So I just say that because it really does make a difference. So that's all we have tonight. I hope you understand the project and if you have questions, we'd certainly look forward to answering them.
Just want to thank everybody again for coming and the respect that you've given to the project. And just reiterate, we're here to answer your questions and alleviate any concerns or whatever it might be. So thank you very much for the opportunity to present before you.
Ask the Finance Committee for their opinion, please.
Susan Berry, Dawson Drive. The Finance Committee recommends approval of this article. We agree that the alternatives that have been selected are fiscally responsible. And we believe that given the small amount needed over the previous $7.2 million that we have approved, that funding this within the tax levy is the wisest move. Thank you.
Selectman?
Thank you, Mr. Moderator. The Selectman voted 4-0 last night to support the article with one member absent. I'd like to provide some color around the board's thinking, if I may. The voters approved a $7.2 million police station project in March. We now know that we will need a small amount of additional funding to complete it and have elected to recommend that we take the money out of the operating budget rather than ask the voters for a tax increase to pay for it. The ballot question next week regarding an additional override was scheduled on the assumption that the amount that we would need would be $700,000 and possibly higher. Because it is only $280,000, we recommend borrowing within the limits of Proposition 2.5 and not asking for an override. As I said, the intent of the board is that the $21,000 of annual debt service for this additional $280,000 come out of the operating budget instead. There are two very important foundations for this recommendation. One, if you don't need to raise taxes to pay for it, don't ask for a tax increase. Two, because the voters had already agreed to support this $7.2 million project, we did not think it was worth risking their support on a sorely needed project that has been years in the making at a special election with possibly low turnout, all over what turns out to be only $21,000 a year. Thank you.
Discussion. Anybody wish to be heard on Article 1? Yes, sir.
Mr. Moderator, Hank Surratt, Longfellow Road. I rise in opposition. I want to apologize to the hall that I wasn't here at the town meeting when decided this ridiculous expenditure this spring. Unfortunately, a business trick took me out of state. I got back. I emailed Mr. Fox about whether or not I could present and found that it had already been passed. This is a ridiculous project. It should be defeated. We can't undo the vote. What we can do is prevent the whipped cream, the sprinkles, the jimmies, the marshmallow. We should tell the people who are behind this thing to stay within the budget we've already given them. Now, as I look at this project, I'm reminded of the child who's been given $10 for ice cream and goes and buys some Chunky Monkey, some Cherry Garcia, some pistachio, and realizes he spent his entire $10. In horror, he realizes he really wants marshmallows, sprinkles, jimmies, and that maraschino cherry. Well, the question is whether he should stay within the budget he's already been given and enjoy the overly indulgent treat, or come to his parents to ask for additional money for the luxury items that he has wisely not properly budgeted for. We were successful in defeating this police station twice. You may recall our editorials in the town meeting called Police, in the Town Crier, calling Prevent the Police for the Police Palace. I wrote those. We need to stop this kind of ridiculous expenditure, because I predict that we'll be back on cost overruns. We've just heard that the O&M costs are going to go up. And what I think we're looking at here is a rather large camel's nose under the tent. Because once we're done with this, I predict there'll be another large building project to build a new town hall. You know, we fought this battle years ago with the building of a building for the DPW. We defeated that twice. The third time it came back, they got it through. So over time, we're winding up with more and more really overbuilt, unnecessary infrastructure for a town of this kind. So I'd ask the hall for a unanimous vote of no.
Anybody else wish to be heard on Article 1? Yes, can we have a mic over there, please?
I just have three questions. Oh, Casey Kang, 96 Old Garrison Road, sorry. I have three questions, if I may. They're very short. Okay, just clarifying questions. I'm curious about what the actual bid was, because you talk about 7.4 million. That's the total project cost. I'm curious to know what the actual bid price was.
Hang on 1 second. Ms. Okay. Kang, why don't we go to all three questions,
okay,
and then we'll get them.
Question number two is you put up the slide about the alternates total approximately 140,000. And so where's the difference? You're asking for 280. What's that extra 144? And then third is, my question is, if I'm sure you're carrying contingencies for construction as well as soft costs, hard costs, so what happens if you do come under budget, for instance? Will the contingencies come back to the town, or you just get to spend them on other things? I'd like to know that. Those are the three. Thanks.
Are you offering that we should spend them anyways, or no?
Just joking. Chief, go ahead. So what was the actual bid?
Yep. The actual bid was $5,993,000.
The natural question, the next question would be, why 7.2?
So the additional funds in that $280,800?
No, let's go back to the bid was approximately $6 million.
Correct.
But you said there's other things that make it up to 7.2. Could you give us some idea? You know what those are. Okay, sorry.
So her question was, Mr. Moderator, that the alternates total approximately $148,000. We're asking for $280,800. So the additional funds with that are adding 2 months of other fees because of the winter construction that we're moving into. The architect typically wants to build a building in 12 months. We're now at 14 months, where we're probably going to be framing and everything through the winter. So it was counting on those additional fees for the operating project manager as well as the architectural fees. That was the... Because originally we were trying to do it within the 12 months, not the 14 months that we now suspect, given that we're going to have the winter construction. And with your last question with the contingency, this whole $280,800 may be a moot point. If we have that within the contingency, and for those that don't understand what a contingency is, it's in the event that you run into issues with our site work. That's one of the things that we're concerned about, that we might run into large boulders or other items that would then cause us a cost overrun, or other overruns like a very severe winter that really constricts the construction ability and the progression of that. It's a contingency of approximately 6.5%. It's good business practice to allow it in there. And if you do have that in the end, then yes, it will go back, once we have our viable project.
Any other questions on Article 1? Yes, sir.
Brian Semple, 15 Revere. So what is the impact on the tax bill for the $280,000 for the average house?
For the average house, it would be approximately $3 per year.
Yes.
Actually, it's zero. Because it's going to be... It will come out of the operating budget.
Okay, so this is where we get into semantics that I get confused.
Right. Yep.
At the end of the day, it's my tax dollars that fund projects like this. So it's not zero, because if we don't spend the money stays in my pocket. So the question is, for the average household, how much money is this costing us?
The incremental impact is zero, because the $80 million operating budget, will be reduced to the extent of $21,000 to pay for this debt service.
Okay, but if we don't do the debt service, then that $21,000 can get returned to us because you're not doing the debt service. So how much money is it costing me out of my pocket? And then we characterize stuff like this all the time where we say there's no impact to the taxpayers, and it's not accurate because this is $280,000. How much is it costing each of the homes?
The $21,000 costs $3 a year for the average household, but the impact on your tax bill will be zero because the operating budget will be reduced dollar for dollar by the amount of this debt service.
So why wouldn't we just reduce taxes next year then? I mean, it's just a feeling like there's an entitlement to the 2.5%, and therefore it's like within the levy because we're within 2.5%. And I don't understand, that's an entitlement that's an entitlement perspective that I don't appreciate, and I don't appreciate when I see things like it's no tax increase, because it is. It's $280,000 if we don't spend it. So it's really $3 on average, and you're only quoting the $21,000, but it's not. It's $280,000. So is it really it's $3 per household?
$3 per household per year, $21,000 per year.
Okay, because that's the debt that's the debt and interest service on the $280,000.
That is the debt service on the $280,000, yes.
Okay, so you want $3 for me for the next 20 years or whatever.
Annually.
Okay, thank you. If going forward, if we could just express stuff that way and not use terms like there's no tax increase, there's no that. I realize there's the semantics of the tax levy, et cetera, but every time you ask for an appropriation from us, you are taking money out of our pocket that if we don't spend it, you should be returning it to us the next year. And it's the same thing when we do the free cash and all the other stuff. It's our money. It should stay in our pocket. And if you're not going to spend it, give it back.
Yeah, I agree. It's your money. It's our money. I'm a taxpayer. It's my money, too. But I think what we're saying is we're going to tighten our – rather than ask for a tax increase, the intent of the board was to ask all the town departments to tighten their belts a little bit in order to cough up the money to pay for this. Which I think is a positive, not a negative.
But we should be tightening our belts anyway. So I'm not following that logic.
Thanks. Understood. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes. Could you stand up over there, please? Can we get that gentleman a mic?
Thank you. I'm John Carr, 219 Knobscot Road. First, I agree with the two gentlemen over there on the left, but what I'd like to ask, would there be any possibility of postponing this increase based on two factors? Number one, controlling overruns. In other words, there's a reward if you keep overruns to either to a minimum or non-existent, then you get the jimmies and whipped cream at the end, as the gentleman expressed. And it concerns me that we're spending all of this money and building these fantastic buildings at the same time as we're losing business. Raytheon made an announcement the other day, which everybody should be aware of. As a matter of fact, you should consider moving into the Raytheon building. It's in great shape, and then you could save $7 million. But I think you all have to be a lot more realistic in the way you approach expenses. Sudbury is not going to continue with this open checkbook and the ability to raise taxes at the whim of the people who run the town. Thank you.
So yes. In response to whether we can postpone it or not?
Chief?
Yes.
Hang on one second.
Sorry.
Go ahead.
So in response to postponing, municipal law requires that we award the contract within 30 days of the bid opening, which would be August 20th. So if we were to do so, and we would then have to go back out to bid, which would further postpone things and further increase the prices. So that's why we're asking for this here. We may be within, we may not even need this funding at one point if the contingency and the uncertainties in the site and other things that we mentioned don't come to fruition, and it would be a moot point. So what we're asking is that this is the upper limit of what we would be spending. We would spend it as diligently as we can, but the costs are only going to increase if we then postpone and have to go out back out to bid. Does that answer your question, sir? Well, that's why we build in the contingency, and the contingency has shrunk as the design percentage has increased, so the uncertainties have diminished. Like when we were before you with the spring town meeting, we were going on two professional estimates that were $700,000 apart. That's what we're going on. Now we're going off of hard numbers for you. We're still the contingency of coming back, but again, we're lessening that exposure of where we're at.
Yes, ma'am, over there.
Martha Cove, 14 Churchill Street. I'm wondering how I'm going to vote on the ballot question next week. And that is because if you read the verbiage of the ballot question, they're talking about a debt exemption. And this motion is about not having a debt exemption and keeping it within the levy limit. So if I want to vote for the police station, how do I vote on the election ballot next week?
Yeah. Yes, Mr. Woodard.
If this motion passes, we will not be asking for an override, and therefore the vote on Tuesday is essentially moot. Because the vote on Tuesday is for an override, and we've decided we don't, at this point, because of the small amount, it's not necessary or prudent to ask for an override when we don't think we need to.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Down here, please.
Rick Johnson, 38 Bent Road. Jim, could you tell us, what's the total contingency budget here? Because this is a 3.9% increase you're asking for. What's your total contingency budget for this project, and what makes up that contingency?
The total contingency is $430,000.
And what are you planning? What are you in that contingency budget? What are you looking for? I mean, you've already built over there, okay? You've built the fire station. I'm sure you've done some civil investigation, so you know if there's ledge or no ledge. You're talking about ledge. Ledge isn't that much money anyway. So where is this $400,000 expected to be spent? Because if we hold you to that budget, right, and say, no, you spend your contingency money on that and don't come to us for any more money. So that's what I'm asking. Why should you come back to us for another 3.9% when you have over 5% contingency built in and you know what you're doing over there? And winter conditions don't cost that much, guys, okay? So if you people don't understand construction, it's not that much money for winter conditions. So what's built into this 5.5% contingency budget?
Yeah, no, we would hope we would spend none of the contingency budget. But it's contingency. It's for the unknowns. It's for the things that we haven't seen. It's for the oversight in a drawing. It's for a door that, where is it? You know, what happened to that door? You're right. We really have been through these plans inside and out, upside and down, up to little things like swinging of a door. We want to go this way. We don't want it that way, which I love to do. That's my, you know, I drive the architect crazy. But I think by doing that, yeah, we want to minimize the change orders. We want to have no mistakes. We want to have it perfect. We want to hit no ledge. But we can't. That's what we want. What in reality could happen is we could hit ledge. We do have allowances already in the specification, so we can hit actually some ledge. But we don't know how much. But again, I think I think the contingency is robust, but I think it's important because we won't want to come back to you and say, we need more money. And as the chief said, and I hope you understand it, we're not really feeling like we're here tonight saying we need more money. We're feeling like we're here tonight, like yesterday was May 6th, and we said we're coming back because we don't know. So this is sort of the continuation of the town meeting in May. So that's a long answer, but you're absolutely right. I hope the contingency remains. It's other people have said that we don't have enough contingency, and I don't know their background, but so it's a contingency, and I believe it's adequate, and I hope it's robust, and I hope it is unaffected.
So, in my opinion, going through construction projects like this, guys, okay, you're coming back to us. You're asking us for money before you need the money. I would rather have you come back and beg us to say, look, this is what we missed. This is why we missed it. This is why we need more money now. Instead, you're coming back to lick the plate, $280,000. We've already given you $7.3 million, and you're coming back asking for more before the project even started. That's what's offending, guys, okay? People in this town, $7 million, you're spending more money on this police station than I will spend on a clean room project in Gloucester, Massachusetts. The cost per square foot is astronomical. And now you're coming back looking for $300,000 more. It's too much, guys. Okay? Use the contingency that you have, and you work those guys, and you work their tails off, so they're not going $0.01 beyond what we've given you. Okay? You've got all these guys on the building committee. You've been over these plans. There better not be any mistakes. You're coming back to us saying there's got to be mistakes. There can't be mistakes, people. Okay? $7.3 million. This has been on the table for 8 years. Okay? You live with the money that we gave you. You shouldn't be coming back to us now. You should be coming back begging for money, explaining the mistakes if they occur. Thank you.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Hang on, Brian. We want to make sure everyone gets a chance once. Anybody else wish to be heard? Could you stand up right there, please?
Jan Hertberg, 7 Tipling Rock Road. So if you ran out, if we didn't allocate this contingency money and you hit who knows what would happen to the project if we didn't have, would the project just halt in mid-construction?
If we had no contingency?
Right.
And we hit ledge. We've talked a lot about the site because that's what we can't see.
Right.
We would have to come back to town meeting. We'd have to find an appropriation, and we would owe the contractor by contract.
So that sounds like that would be way more expensive to halt the construction, hang around, get the more money. That's crazy.
It's an unwise decision to believe that we live in a perfect world, and we will not have find a mistake. If you have your own home, if you're going to do some work, and your budget is $100 and your price is $100, I'm telling you right now, you should wait a little while or you should have built in a contingency.
Okay. Yes, there's someone right there. Could you stand up, please? Get a mic over there.
Thank you. Mara Houston, Peckham Road. Two questions. One, to follow on with the third question that Kesty asked. I didn't hear the answer to, if you don't use all the money, what happens? Another question is, if you're tightening the belt to take this money out of operating expenses and you don't need it, are the belts going to be staying tight next year and therefore those operating budgets that you tighten up are going to stay low for next year? So I also agree that the idea of coming back when you know more. We have a town meeting happening in 6 months, 8 months, whenever it is in the spring, and that's within your construction time. Is it reasonable to say that you can come back in the spring and say, all right, this is what we've done so far, this has been staying on budget, this is over budget, we hit ledge, this is why this went up, we need this much more to finish it off. Is that a reasonable way to handle it to get to deal with the concerns of the hall?
Jim or Scott? Firstly, could we start with the answer that you gave before on whether or not the money comes back if you don't use it?
Sure. If it's not spent, you just don't go out and bond that much money, or you're not looking to do that out of the levy. As far as tightening up belts and operating budgets, that's up to other entities that they set the limits and so forth. As far as I think what Mr. Johnson is missing is this is a municipal project versus a private project. So if we don't have the funds available now to award the contract, we cannot award that contract. Now, could we reduce the contingency and put it down to nothing? Yes, but that is not good business practice. Every construction, what I've learned, I'm not a construction guy. I know handcuffs and other things like that, all right? But everybody says 6 to 8, 10%. Other people have come back and said, you don't have enough contingency. What if you do run into things? But from what I understand, the permanent building, 6 to 8% is what they've run with every one of their projects. They've never, ever come back to town for additional funds in the 36 years that Mr. Melnick was talking about. And if it's just not spent, it's not spent.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, sir. Could you stand up, please?
Paul Pekas, 231 Knobscot Road. I'm against the article. I acknowledge the fact that the town wants a new police station, but if we're going to do it, let's do it as inexpensively as possible, regardless of the source of the funds. Now, why am I against it? I'm against it because here in eastern Massachusetts, we're stuck with this model of inertia where every 5 miles we have a police station, a police force, and a police chief. What we need is a regional solution to police services, not the inefficient model that we have today. So if we're going to do it, let's do it as cheaply as possible.
Anybody else? Again, before we get to for people to speak twice, is there anyone who hasn't spoken yet? Yes, on the aisle over there.
Doug Zingale, 48 Plimpton Road. The aspect of this project which has continued to puzzle me is captured pretty well by a couple of numbers that were in the argument in opposition that appeared in one of these documents that were handed out. And it's the overall scale of the project. And I understand the narrow focus of this particular vote you're looking for, but I'm going to ask my question anyway and see if it can be addressed. And it's the basic ratio between the size of the facility and the number of people that would normally be present in the facility at any one time. If you do the simple math, it's 1,600 square feet per person present in the facility. As a matter of intuition, that doesn't strike me as reasonable. I'm sure there's an explanation, and I'd appreciate hearing a little bit about why that ratio is what it is.
So we didn't just pull the square footage out of the air. We've gone with what other police stations have been constructed and looked at things and so forth. I'll give you an example. Weston, two doors down, is already under construction. They have a 20,000 square foot building with a $12 million budget approved. They were a smaller department, less busy department, and it's just the fact of where it goes. We don't just pull it out of the ground. A lot of what's been put out there is we might have two or three people in the building at a time. That may be true in like a midnight shift if I only have two dispatchers and all the patrolmen are on the road. But if you're talking a day shift that you could have a chief, two lieutenants, two detectives, two administrative personnel, two dispatchers, as well as patrolmen in and out for reports and so forth. So some of the numbers that have been out there are misrepresented in my opinion. But it's not necessarily that every part of the building is used every time. There's segments of a cell block that, you know, I would love to do a regional lockup, but you still need a lockup to hold people for a temporary time until we can bail them. So therefore, we reduce the cell block from 6 cells to 4 cells in order to meet codes with ADA compliance and sight and sound for juveniles and males and females and all the different things. So in comparing the whole building as square footage, I don't think is the proper way to do it because the cell block is one segment of the building. It's almost like multiple buildings under one roof. You know, you have your administrator's offices on the second floor. You have locker rooms that, yeah, during shift change, those are very busy, and those are important and stored all the equipment. But that is empty come shift change unless you've got detail officers coming in. We have 28 officers, 9 civilian dispatchers, 2 administrative personnel, and approximately 14 special officers. They come in and out the building on a regular basis. To say the 2 on a midnight, it might just be the dispatchers, that would be accurate, but the rest of the time, no. And again, we try to compare to Littleton, Duxbury, again, Weston next door, other stations like that, so we're not just pulling that out of the air. We're trying to make sure that we have a sufficient building that can grow into the future, that we're not going to be back in 20 years saying, yeah, we've got to put an addition on. You know, something we're looking to do, a building that's 40, 50 years plus until that we need to come back and ask for hovercraft parking or something like that because, you know, that's a new invention that's unforeseen. But that's what our vision is going forward.
Okay. Let's in the questions and the answers, let's try and stick to the $280,800 as opposed to the $7.2 million, because that's what this motion is about, is $280,800. Anybody who hasn't spoken yet? Yes, wait, right here. Could you stand up, please? Thank you.
Kathy Jacob, 328 Old Lancaster Road. If you don't spend your contingency, will you get your outbuilding? Can you get a bonus?
No, it wouldn't be a bonus. The outbuilding is the third. Can I speak?
Yes, please.
It's the third alternate. It's interesting. I mean, this is really interesting because we've been to the hall. We listen to a lot of people. We've been to every board at least twice. We've given out information at the dump. And like I said before, these questions are great. But it's so interesting to hear the contrast from, you know, you hear this, someone say that, and then someone says that. And the outbuilding is precisely the example why we did not include it. We respect the taxes. I mean, we don't want to build excessive. We want to build what we need. We'd love to have that. But we're trying to please, honestly, everybody in town. And we won't, and I know that. But that's why the decision not to have alternate 3 was in there. So, but to your question, absolutely. If we can, let me put it this way. If at least the foundation would be great. Because if we get out of the ground, you know, then you just like go to the lumberyard. So, but we don't know that yet. We can't predict that. We shouldn't make assumptions. We've got to get through the site work. Once we get out of that ground, I think we're going to have a pretty good idea. And maybe we'll have, I don't know if it's legal, but maybe we could have an update at town meeting. But we'll have updates at the selectmen's meeting. And we'll keep everybody posted. And we'll let you know what we find and what we don't find. So, good question. I mean, good questions, everybody. Like I said, that's a great example of what we're trying to do.
Anyone else who hasn't spoken yet? Yes. Could you stand up, please? Can you get a mic there?
Good evening. Scott Herzog, 99 Blueberry Hill Lane. This is a question for Mr. Kelly. Regarding the utility costs that you mentioned a few moments ago. And I appreciate that you had said that a significant part of the operating costs go toward heating, cooling, air conditioning, ventilating the building, which is correct. Have you thought about or figured into the cost the day that you move into the new facility? The town still has to maintain that old Route 20 property until such time as you decide to sell it, demolish it, do something with it. You're still going to have to heat it. You're still going to have to cool it. You're still going to have to ventilate it. And these are going to be ongoing costs. So I guess the question is, you said there's been no determination about what that old property will be used for. So the question is, why wasn't that done as a larger part of planning the new facility and the cost for whatever happens to that building, selling, maintaining, demolishing, included in the overall construction project?
Mr. Kelly?
To your first question, yes, we have acknowledged that. That's a concern. We don't want to be maintaining, supporting, heating, cooling 2 buildings, especially if 1 building is vacant. We haven't gone any further than, like I said, we haven't made any decisions yet because we just felt it was just a little bit premature. We know we have an asset there. We have had an appraisal of about $800,000. It's a prime retail spot. Small, but it's right there. I feel as though we have 14 months, perhaps, if things we'll see tonight, to make those decisions. And I think we're lining up to talk about it right away. We're talking about it tonight, and I think that's one of the reasons it was a slide. I hope to talk about it in the fall on the forum, and it's all of our building, so we will have to make that decision, and we should make it in a timely manner so that we don't get stuck heating, cooling, air conditioning, you know, maintaining a building that's not used. However, I can't speak for – well, I'll speak for myself. You know, we want to also make sure we don't rid ourselves of an asset that might have value to the town in the future. I don't know what that purpose would be, but that, again, will be discussions that we can all have. Maybe somebody has a good idea. But I hope that answers the question.
I just want to add to that as well what we've learned, again, through the municipal finance laws, which has taken me a long time to understand, especially with this. I'm not a construction guy, but in order to offset the cost of the police station, you have to have the project completed before you can have legislation and other things in order to do so. So it isn't such as simple as selling a house as with municipal property.
Anybody else wish to be heard? Yes, could you stand up, please?
Hi, Berkeley O'Keefe, 25 Beckwith Street. I first want to commend Chief Nix on their work of his whole department over the last few weeks and over the years, so thank you. But my question is, if these funds are not approved, what would the impact on police operations be? Is it something that we absolutely need? I mean, you're getting a $7.2 million police station, covered parking and some trees. Is that really something that's going to impact your day-to-day operations? Thank you.
Chief?
Absolutely. To be honest with you, my officers, I commend them for working in the conditions that they have. For those that have been in the station, there's a booking room that is at the back of the station. You then have to go through the area where the public would come if you want to come in and file a report or something like that. You've got to walk down four stairs and then go into a cell block. That should be totally segregated from where you're coming in to file an identity theft report, where the administrative personnel should be, all those things. Oftentimes, you're trying to interview, have a meeting or interview two individuals. We have one meeting slash interview room that is recorded. That is our only ability. We have multiple investigations. You know, this is an odd investigation at Lincoln Sudbury. During the homicide in 2007, we had to do it out of here around students. We couldn't do it at our station because it would not sustain. We took over multiple offices in order to do that. Now, I understand that's an anomaly, but there are other investigations that really curtail things. So it's a safety, it's an operationally efficient circumstance. The dispatch center, which the dispatchers stay in every day, two personnel, was designed for one individual. So we have feed over of radios and phones and things like that, that we work through it, and we're always going to persevere through it, and I'm proud of them for doing that. But this absolutely would make things much more efficient and safe for the community.
I think the question was the 200, not the 7.2 million, but the $280,000. How would that impact?
Okay, specific. Okay, so the landscaping again was something we took out as a pricing mechanism in order to with the uncertainty of what the prices were. The covered parking it would be an incredible value for us for maintaining our equipment, maintaining the uniforms. You know, every time you have shift change, you're bringing cruiser bags out. You might be bringing medical bags. You're checking all the cruiser lights. You're checking the weapons in the vehicle. You're checking all the mechanism, the computers. When you're doing so in the middle of a snowstorm, a rainstorm, in the sun, whatever it might be, it would be good. And again, I didn't just dream the stuff that it would be good to have covered parking. If you look around, you know, Marlboro next door, Weston is building it with covered parking. Every one of the stations that we visited all have covered parking. And as a matter of fact, most of the covered parking is attached to the building, so you don't even have to walk into the weather before you get in the cruiser. We couldn't design it given the dynamics there, but it is what it is. You know, the additional 2 months that we're trying to buffer in because we're going to be in the winter construction, that was the additional amount over the alternates. Does that answer your question?
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Hang on. Yes, on the aisle, please.
Robert Abrams, 48 Horse Pond Road. I'm usually the one that is raising the cost questions, like why isn't this being regionalized, like I'm the one that always says they can always take the budget they have and squeeze $21,000 out for something. They never do it. They never admit they can do it until they have a situation like this, and they have to. So I'm sensitive to all of those arguments. Now, I haven't heard one person argue that we don't need a new police station. I haven't heard one person argue that the police station that we have now is adequate. It's not. It's grossly inadequate. And as one who is very sensitive to municipal expenditures, I am underwhelmed by $280,000 on a $7.2 million budget. Jim Kelly, Chief Nix, the committee, these folks have worked very hard. This project started out several years ago. Mr. Surratt pointed out we voted it down. I don't want to guess what the number was, but it was close to twice as much as this. They designed a Cadillac, and the town said, no, you can't have a Cadillac. These people have done a great job in addressing a need that this town desperately has and that our public safety people deserve. And I don't think we ought to be wasting an hour quibbling about $280,000. We wouldn't be quibbling about it if it was the school budget. We'd just blow it right out of here. So let's give the public safety people the respect that they deserve. I think the chief and Jim Kelly and the rest of them have done a great job. Let's get this voted and move on. Thank you.
No clapping, please. Hang on. The question has been called. All those who would like to add something new to discussion, please raise your hand. One. Anyone else? We have one. We've gone on for about an hour, so would you keep it in mind that just one person wishes to speak? And this is a two-thirds vote on to whether or not we should call the question. All those in favor of the call of the question signify by raising your cards. All those opposed, or it passes by well more than two-thirds. So we're moving on to a vote. We have it on the screen. That is the motion. All those, we're actually going to take the negative votes first because it's easier in a two-thirds vote to take the negative vote, double it, and then count the positive votes. So all those who are opposed to this motion signify by raising your cards. All those in favor, it passes by way over two-thirds. Please stay for another 15, 20 minutes. We're moving on to two short articles. Article 2, Mr. Sullivan will make
you a
five-minute presentation followed by the FinCom opinion, the Selectman opinion. No debate on a non-binding resolution. We'll vote it up or down. Thank you all for staying.
Should I introduce the article, Mr. Moderator, please? So Article 2 resolution, which is
just for the record, Andy, just your name
and
address.
Absolutely. Andrew Sullivan, 28 French Road, and I'm the founder of Sudbury Greenways in Sudbury. So this is Article 2 resolution. It is non-binding, and it is for a rail trail from the Wayland town line to the Hudson town line. And I move in the words of the article.
Okay. Please present it. No second is necessary.
Okay. So the Mass Central Rail Trail here in Sudbury. To give you some information in terms of the developments that have taken place over the last year and some of Sudbury's options at this time. In 2011, the DCR executed a 99-year lease with the MBTA for the 23-mile stretch of the right-of-way from Waltham to Berlin to develop a multi-use recreational trail and coined the name the Wayside Branch, which is obviously nice. It has some historic significance here in Sudbury. January 14, DCR received a MEPA certificate, or a Mass Environmental Policy Act certificate, and was granted a waiver from filing a EIR, or Environmental Impact Report. That effectively green-lighted this project for any of the towns that were interested in participating in a joint venture, if you will, with DCR. June of 14, DCR began to engage towns, the eight towns along the right-of-way, to develop the trail. The project has no funding through DCR, but they're very interested in partnering with the towns for funding and for their community vision of what the trail should look like. What is this trail in Sudbury? It's 4.6 miles long. It runs east to west in the southern section of town, roughly paralleling Route 20. The average right-of-way is 60 to 80 feet. Taking it from the Wayland Town line, heading west, it goes under Landham Road, crosses Route 20, Union Avenue, Horse Pond Road, Peckham Road, and Dutton Road, all at grade, and then exits the town out through the Concom area and the Women's Federation conservation land west of Dutton Road. Crosses Hot Brook twice west of Dutton Road, as well as behind Mill Village. It's a great run. You can see it's a little small, but the purple line running left to right is the right-of-way, and you can see that intersecting our other rail trail in town, the Bruce Freeman Rail Trail, which is the brown line running up and down or north and south. This is an expanded view from the west, the western portion. You can see the linear parcel running across. So this is on the west side. This is the central portion of the trail, hitting most of our neighborhoods. And this is the easterly portion heading out behind Mill Village towards Wayland and crossing Route 20 again at Russell's Garden Center in Wayland. So what are the specifications that DCR is looking for this particular trail? They're recommending a 19-foot construction corridor inside of that 60 to 80-foot right-of-way. They are telling us that we need to have a minimally 10-foot wide multi-use recreational trail with 2-foot shoulders. It must be Americans with Disability Act or ADA compliant in terms of its access points, and it must have safe road crossings that meet the manual of uniform traffic code devices standards, and something that's important, I know, to Chief Nix as well. We must be rehabilitating the bridges, installing decking and railings. Made a lot of progress this July. DCR had a meeting with Sudbury and Sudbury Greenways. All of the top town staff was there, a number of the Board of Selectmen. I was there. DCR presented on the status of the trail and their desire to partner with towns in terms of the funding and each community's vision of the trail. The project is currently unfunded at the state or DCR level. DCR indicated that they're not mandating a trail surface, and low-cost stone dust can be used in terms of the finish coat on the trail. And they confirmed that they'd allow Sudbury to approach this in a phased development capacity. A couple other important points. DCR controls the steel rails that are in the right-of-way, and they will allow the town to use those steel rails, use the salvage value of those steel rails, to offset a significant portion of the development costs. They estimate that when and if they are able to do this with federal funds, many, many years down the road, it will cost $1.2 million per mile. However, if we develop a greenway now, that'll cost $80,000 per mile to the town. So what Sudbury Greenways did is engage Beta Environmental Engineering and an outfit called Iron Horse Preservation Society to give us a design-build quote, meaning the cost to both design and build it. And for the entire trail, that is $450,000, a 4.6-mile compliant, safe trail. This has been further reviewed by Sudbury Planning and Development. We're looking over a couple of very small items, but the estimate seems to be in line with expectations at this time. I think it's important to point out that converting the right-of-way to a greenway-style trail now absolutely in no way precludes Sudbury from paving the trail or making upgrades at some point in the future when and if state funding can be secured. This is a picture of an example of a 10-foot-wide rolled stone dust trail. It doesn't have the 2-foot shoulders like we would.
Andy, could you? That's the 5-minute mark.
Yeah, I can race through the last piece. I got two or three more slides. Thank you very much. September 3rd, the Board of Selectmen did vote yesterday in favor of this article to convert the abandoned rail right away. How would this work? Towns receive permitting from their CONCOM through an NOI or a notice of intent. They're granted an access and construction permit by DCR. we must meet their standards before they're going to grant us that. Towns fund the project. They hire a firm through normal procurement measures. And we're not waiting is the most important thing. This would not involve a four-step, 5 to 6 year design study process and take us through a typically difficult state funding model. Here is the overall estimate, including everything that DCR is looking for, that planning and development here in Sudbury has reviewed for $450,000. And thank you very much for your consideration on this article, and I hope you'll consider voting yes and moving on the ability to develop this trail. Thank you very much.
Finance Committee opinion.
The Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Selectman's opinion.
The Board of Selectmen supports the article.
Okay. So, again, it's a non-binding resolution, so we don't do a head count, but we want to give the selectmen a sense of the meeting, so I will ask all those in favor just to raise your cards. All those opposed, it passes overwhelmingly. We're going to move on to Article 3. Mr. Sullivan, please.
Thank you. Again, Andrew Sullivan, 28 French Road, and the founder of Sudbury Greenways. Article 3 resolution, also non-binding, the Mass Central Rail Trail from Dutton Road to Union Avenue, and I move in the words of the article.
Please continue.
Thank you. Okay, so this is the potential Mass Central Rail Trail Phase 1. Here again is the picture of the overall right-of-way, the purple linear line going from the left of the screen to the right of the screen. Here again is the type of trail we're talking about. Again, this is from Danvers, and they didn't have the funding to do anything but remove the steel rails and the wood and smooth it down and eventually get some stone dust in there. They kind of have a bare-bones trail beyond the stone dust. We're going to have some nice shoulders and other bells and whistles, if you will, to make the trail up to DCR's standards. This was not a DCR trail. Here's the specs on it. It runs from Dutton Road to Union Avenue. It is 1.8 miles. It happens to be the lowest cost section of the trail, the reason being there are no bridges, no high volume road crossings, and less wetlands abutment in other areas. Those are all areas of increased cost. The conceptual design estimate that we've received from Beta Environmental Engineering and Iron Horse Preservation Society, both highly regarded firms in their field, is for $160,000. It connects numerous neighborhoods, and it also provides those neighborhoods and trail access to Route 20 Union Avenue, coming out at the Union Avenue entrance of Chiswick Park. Here's a blown-up picture map of the right-of-way. Again, you see from the top left to the bottom right, the right-of-way, the linear right-of-way. And here is the conceptual design estimate for $160,000. Again, Beta Environmental Engineering is very familiar with DCR specs and what they require in terms of a safe, high-quality trail. Additionally, this has had at least a primary review by planning and community development here in Sudbury, and everyone thinks in general that this conceptual cost estimate looks roughly in line with what we should be looking at in terms of costs. How does this work? Again, the only, you know, the reason I'm here, the board did vote in support of this at their meeting yesterday. In the fall of 14, Sudbury Greenways has offered to donate for the cost of wetlands delineation and preparation of the NOI or the Notice of Intent to Sudbury CONCOM. It's roughly $15,000. We think that'll help jumpstart the project and allow us to be able to put one foot in front of the other in terms of getting things moving. Fall of 14 also, we're asking the town, through the leadership of the Board of Selectmen, to determine a funding source and to create a binding warrant article for the project and to hold a town meeting for voter approval, the next available town meeting. Again, the estimated cost is $160,000. Potential funding sources could be free cash, a capital exclusion, or Community Preservation Act funds. Thank you very much for your time, and please consider voting yes on Phase 1 of the Mass Central Rail Trail. Thank you.
Finance Committee opinion?
The Finance Committee takes no position on this article.
Selectman?
The Board of Selectmen supports the article.
Okay. All those in favor of the non-binding resolution, Article 3, signify by raising your cards. All those opposed. It passes overwhelmingly. Do I hear a motion to dissolve the special town meeting? So moved. Is there a second? There is. All those in favor signify by raising your cards. Those opposed. It passes unanimously. Thank you all very much. Have a nice fall.